ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়। ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়। ওম নমো ভগবতে বাসুদেবায়। এবং বিলাপথিনাম যবাই হরি গৃহামৃথম পথিম অনিচাথিনাম নিরহারম আর্কৌস্তম সন্যবর্তত। এবং বলি এবং বিলাপথিনাম বাই হরি গৃহামৃথম পথিম অনিচ্ছাথিনাম নিরহারম আর্কৌস্তম সন্যবর্তত।
The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to the Vedic system, if a person dies during the daytime, it is customary for his funeral ceremony to be performed before the sun sets, regardless of whether he is burned or buried. And if he dies at night, the funeral must be completed before the next sunrise. Apparently, the queens continued lamenting for the dead body, the lump of matter, and would not allow it to be taken away for burning. This illustrates the strong grip of illusion among foolish persons who consider the body the self. Women are generally considered less intelligent. Because of ignorance only, the queens thought of the dead body as their husband, and somehow or other thought that if the body were kept, their husband would remain with them. Such a conception of the self is certainly for Gokara, cows and asses. We have actually seen that sometimes when a cow's calf has died, the milkman cheats the cow by presenting before her the dead body of her calf. Thus the cow, who would not otherwise allow milking, licks the dead body of the calf and allows herself to be milked. This substantiates the description of the Shastra, that a foolish man in the bodily concept of life is like a cow. Not only do foolish men and women consider the body the self, but we have even seen that the dead body of a so-called yogi was kept for days by his disciples, who thought that their guru was in samadhi. When decomposition began and a bad smell unfortunately began to overwhelm the yogic power, the disciples allowed the dead body of the so-called yogi to be burned. Thus, the bodily concept of life is extremely strong among foolish persons who are compared to cows and asses. Nowadays, great scientists are trying to freeze dead bodies so that in the future these frozen bodies may again be brought to life. The incident narrated by Hiranyakashipu from history must have taken place millions of years ago, because Hiranyakashipu lived millions of years ago and was even then quoting from history. Thus, the incident occurred before Hiranyakashipu's lifetime. But the same ignorance in the bodily concept of life is still prevalent, not only among laymen, but even among scientists who think that they will be able to revive frozen corpses. Apparently, the queens did not want to deliver the dead body for burning because they were afraid of dying with the dead body of their husband. Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 36. Hiranyakashipu is herein trying to pacify the lamentation of his mother, his sister-in-law, and other such relatives. The great Lord Varahadev has just slain Hiranyaksha. And of course, due to the human ego, Hiranyakashipu saw nothing but the good qualities in Hiranyaksha and nothing but faults in Varahadev. He considered Hiranyaksha, he may have made some mistakes, but he was noble, heroic, loyal, so many good qualities. But Varahadev, by killing my brother, he violated the principle of equality. Although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is supposed to be equal to all, he has taken side with the demigods. Therefore, he deserves to die. Although Hiranyakashipu understood that Vishnu is the Lord, see to the extent false pride can delude the consciousness, he was actually convinced that he could sever the head of the Lord and drink his blood to pacify the departed soul of his brother. However, after revealing such insanity, he goes on to speak profound, systematic philosophy, perfectly based on the revealed scriptures. He is telling that my dear relatives, why you lament? The body and the soul are different. The soul never dies. The body essentially is always dead. There is never a connection between the soul and the body in terms of identity. The soul has to temporarily live in a body, and then at a certain time, it moves forward. Now, stories are very effective to grasp people's attention. Because after all, what is the use of philosophy if it does not transform the heart? The purpose of all the scriptures is to transform the heart. Vidaishta sarveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna tells, all the Vedas are to know me. So Hiranyakashipu, he begins a beautiful story, an old history about a king named Suyagya. He was a great, powerful king who fought on the battlefield courageously. In those days, kings showed their love, you can say, showed their concern, showed their loyalty to their citizens by willing to be in the front of the lines of battle and personally fight. It wasn't about getting votes, having office, being famous, getting a lot of bribes perhaps, directly or indirectly. It was about sacrifice. If there was a war to be fought for the protection of the citizens, the king was first in the battlefield. And he had to be a great fighter. Suyagya was slain. And Hiranyakashipu was describing, his body was laid, splattered with blood. His limbs were crushed. Sprawled out on the battlefield, he had his golden helmet, his armor, and his teeth were very tight, biting, like one who is in anger. He fought to the end. And obviously, a very powerful man. But in Srila Prabhupada's purport, quoting from the previous acharyas, he explains how, however powerful one may be, however great, however learned, there is a power beyond our own. The power of God. And in this world, the power of God is constantly manifest within the laws of karma. Destiny is all powerful. If one is meant to die through the power of an insignificant insect, there's nothing that can save you. Yes? We had experience with our Radha Gopinath Prabhu. Very good brahmachari, excellent sadhu. Brahmin, South India, Iyengar, yes? Very noble, noble family. Has master's degree, has his own school, earning good money. What family would want to see someone like that become a brahmachari? loss of money, loss of everything to the family, but he came. I remember when I first met him, he had so many questions. We were in a little village outside of Belgaum. What was the name of that village? Yes, like that. And I just gave lecture, kirtan, questions and answers. I was so tired. There was a nice tree. I think it was a tamarind tree. Very beautiful tree. Nice shade. And they said, you know, Swamiji, you can rest under this tree. So I'm sitting under the tree, and here comes this person. And he had questions. One question after another, after another, after another. And they were such complex questions. In my heart, I was so offensive. I was thinking, when will he leave me alone? I had another program in the evening, another lecture, another kirtan, so many hundreds of devotees, let me rest. But he kept asking questions. And in my heart I was thinking, this is an extraordinary special person. You never know who is who. Anybody who comes to the Sangam of Vaishnavas, we should know that Krishna in the heart of that personality has brought him. We do not know who that person is, where they've been. So he became nice brahmachari, wonderful brahmachari. Humble menial services, powerful grasp of the philosophy. He already knew quite well as a scholar of Sanskrit, singing, yes. So he dovetailed his propensities and became a very prominent preacher. And thousands and thousands of people through his Gita discourses, his Bhagavat discourses, he's attracted their hearts wherever he goes. When he was in Pune, everybody there said, Radha Gopinath Prabhu is our brahmachari. When he was in Sion, he is our brahmachari. When he was at Mira Road, he is our brahmachari. Wherever he goes, people love him. They're all, because his good qualities, his precise, powerful presentation of the philosophy, very systematic. Yes. So amazingly, he went to visit his hometown near Bangalore in Karnataka, and the whole town had a festival to welcome him. Yes, family, I think the mayor came, everyone came. They had a festival to welcome. A boy from our town has become a sadhu. This is so auspicious. Only in India is it like this. Anyways, we'll now fast forward several years. Yes, he has influenced thousands and thousands of people, and people are listening to his tapes and his CDs and his videos all over the world and everything else. And he's one of the temple presidents of Radha Gopinath Temple here, despite his own ideas. So he's in Mayapur. And how big was that mosquito that bit me? He doesn't even know where the mosquito bit him. He's a very tall person. And mosquito is very small, very tiny. And this tiny, tiny little mosquito, skinny little arms, skinny little legs, just within a second. He was... Something went to the virus went to his brain. He was in intensive care. He was absolutely devastated. Had to be brought to hospital. Doctor said if you would have come 1 hour later, you could have never survived. He's laying there in intensive care. The power of a little tiny mosquito. Mosquito doesn't know any slokas. Radha Gopi knows there's hundreds and hundreds of Sanskrit slokas, Bengali slokas, all these. What does this mosquito know? But destiny. He was conquered, defeated. The mosquito had a good festival, Utsav, good feast, and Radha Gopi had suffered for weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's not a matter of, Prabhupada explains in these purports, very, very wealthy man with the best doctors suffering horrible diseases. And people who can't afford anything are in such good health. We are not the controllers, we are never the controllers. Destiny is very powerful. So here is Suyagya. Although so great, he's defeated. He's dead. And on the material platform, death is very inconceivable to the mind because it is irreversible. It's done. It cannot be changed. There's nothing we could do to try to change things, make it different so it wouldn't have happened. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham, the nature of this world, so much danger at every step. A moment of inattentiveness, death may come upon us. And there's nothing you could do to redo that. It's done. We have seen. So he's finished. His queens, they are so brokenhearted due to deep attachment. Attachment in the sense he gave them such emotional gratification and protection and physical gratification and affection. How will they live without them? Their entire life was full of uncertainties. They were holding on to his body, weeping, crying. And when it was time for the last rites before the sun sets, they were just embracing that body, unwilling to let it go. Now Yamaraj is Mahajan. He's a very compassionate, great Vaishnava. He saw the situation. Is this love? Real love can only be where we are conscious of who our object of love is. Srila Prabhupada used example. If a man is drowning, and you swim out to the lake and take his clothes off and bring it back to the shore. Is that love? You save the clothes, but the man suffers and dies. Basamsi jinani atavihaya. The body is only the clothes in which the soul is wearing temporarily. And real love must be expressed by our deep concern for the person, for the Atma, for the spirit soul. These queens, because of their own selfish, ignorant attachment to the body, they wouldn't let their husband be brought, his body be brought to the last rites. But what was actually happening? This is explained by our acharyas in the purport. Because he was so attached to the body, and he was so attached to his queens, and he was so attached to his position, his soul, like a ghost, was hovering around that body, wouldn't let that body go. Not only because of the body itself, but because of the objects that the body was attached to. Primarily, the queens. So that soul is here in a ghostly body, unable to move forward, in a miserable condition. He can't enjoy that body anymore. It's dead. But he can't give it up. He can't move on. He can't have a relationship with the queens anymore. But he can't separate himself from the bodily connection to them. So all of his progress is blocked. He's a ghost, simply clinging to a dead corpse. Why? Because of his queen's so-called love. These queens were performing the greatest injustice to their husband. They were perpetuating horrible suffering. We are reading today, this is why the custom is that if a person dies in the day, the body should either be burned or buried before the sun sets. And if he dies after the sunset, it should be burned or buried before the sunrise. Why? It's based on a science, on a philosophy of compassion for that soul. What is the use of stagnating our progress in destiny, our progress toward God, due to attachment to a dead corpse? So when you burn the body, there's nothing for the soul to hover around and be attached to anymore. So it moves on according to its destiny. Sarva dharman purityasya mam ekam sharanam. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami masuja. Ultimately, before death, it is the duty of every human being to surrender to Krishna. Whatever our destiny may be, there is no power that could intervene within our destiny except that of God. Karma is a law. What goes up must come down. It doesn't matter whether you believe it. You cannot change that law. Whatever sins, whatever pious deeds we have performed, we must reap the results. But if we surrender to Krishna, He protects us from all sinful reactions. He removes us from the laws that He has created and brings us into the shelter of His own compassionate nature. Mahatmanastumam parata daivim prakriti mashata. Mahatma is that person, that great soul, who takes shelter of the Lord, who worships the Lord. The Lord puts that person under the control of His divine internal energy. Otherwise, we're simply at the disposal of Maya, the illusory energy. So Yamaraj wanted to show compassion to this king, and also the queens as well. What is their future? Being endlessly attached to a dead corpse, weeping and crying. Is it that if they just keep the corpse, preserve the corpse, after some days they'll overcome their grieving and have a relationship again? As long as they're keeping that corpse, their suffering is perpetuated. Neither the king can move on, nor could the queens. Is this love? In Krishna consciousness, because we are aware of the eternal soul, we can express tangible love that will actually benefit others. Hiranyakashipu, he's telling this wonderful story with such excellent philosophy of the difference between body and spirit and even the power of God. But what is the use? Srila Prabhupada spoke to one PhD candidate who was asking him about philosophy. Interesting conversation. She said, I am doing my PhD thesis on the subject of how Indian gurus have affected Western culture. Can you tell me how you feel you have affected Western culture? Prabhupada said, what culture? What culture you're talking about? The cow is giving you milk like your mother, and then you're cutting the throat of the cow, you're drinking the blood, you're eating the meat, eating your mother. What kind of gratitude is that? What kind of culture is that? In your own religion, thou shalt not kill, and you're killing. Where is your culture? She wasn't expecting that answer. She tried to change the subject, but Srila Prabhupada was very, very strong. Finally, exasperated, she said, sir, can I ask you a philosophical question? Would you like to hear Prabhupada's reply? Prabhupada said, philosophy without good character has no value. Little or no value whatsoever. Here we find this principle to its extreme. Hiranyakashipu could speak philosophy probably better than anyone in the world today. What a brain he had. But he didn't have good character. What is the use? Therefore, there was no realization. Rather, his philosophy, although it was correct, was bringing him down rather than up. Because Krishna, he is bhavagrahi. He doesn't accept what you speak and what you do. Krishna accepts your intention, the purpose in which you are speaking and doing. That is bhakti. Bhakti is about our intention. How many people milk cows? In the West, there are so many people milking cows. And when the cows give less milk, they send them to slaughterhouse. The gopis are milking cows. The gopis are taking care of cows. They're churning butter. So many people are doing that. Why are they the supreme, super excellent, most intimate of all devotees? Because of their purpose. Their exclusive, singular purpose only for Krishna's pleasure. To assist Sri Radharani in giving pleasure to Bhagavan, Lord Krishna. That's all. And because the intensity, the intimacy, the purity of their love, even when they're churning butter, that's the ultimate yoga. Their churning butter is accessing the highest pleasure of Gopinath. And he's filling their hearts with the highest ecstasies of love. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains that the gopis of Vrindavan never consider their own welfare or their own happiness. Never. They're only thinking of the happiness of Radha and Krishna. And therefore, Radha, Gopinath, fill their hearts with the highest happiness. If you do not want happiness, you only want Krishna's happiness, Krishna reciprocates and gives you the ultimate happiness. But if their ecstasies is in any way interfering with the capacity in which they could serve the Lord, they consider their ecstatic symptoms to be an impediment and pray that it will go away because it is not their concern. So it is not about simply the external manifestations of what we can do and what we can say. Krishna's Paramatma. He's seeing within the core of the heart. He's seeing the motive, the intention, the purpose of our every thought, our every word, and our every deed. And according to that motivation, Krishna is going to reciprocate and reveal himself. So, herein we find that Hiranyakashipu is a great scholar. He's a genius. But what is his purpose? His purpose is Kanaka Kamini Pratishta. He wants to enjoy beautiful women. He wants to enjoy fabulous wealth. And he wants to enjoy prestige, being honored and worshipped by others. Therefore, because of this bad character, all of his genius understanding of philosophy is corrupt. And we have little Prahlad, 5-year-old son. At one time, he was Hiranyakashipu's favorite son. Hiranyakashipu loved him. He would put little Prahlad in his lap, embrace him, smell his head, and tears would flow from Hiranyakashipu's eyes in fatherly affection. But he was a devotee. He was a devotee of the killer of his brother. And worse than that, Hiranyakashipu could not control his son. Now, there are many parents assembled here today. What type of anxiety is there in your heart when you cannot control your child? When they're doing just opposite what you expect them to do. When they're behaving in such a way that they're creating a terrible stain on your reputation in society, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's a very miserable condition. That was Hiranyakashipu's condition. And we know this story, how he blasphemed Prahlad, threatened him, attempted to murder him through so many different ways. But what was Prahlad's character? He cared nothing about his own welfare. He cared nothing about his own position. He cared nothing about anything for himself. At any cost, he simply wanted to please Krishna. He was faithful to Krishna. And this is what Vaishnavism is about. Being faithful to the will of the Lord in the face of great obstacles. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us that obstacles come in the path of a devotee's life only to make that devotee stronger. Only to bring that devotee closer to Krishna. If we have the right purpose. So little Prahlad, he didn't care. As long as Krishna was satisfied, if the whole race of the whole society around him hated him, and his life was at stake, didn't matter. If Krishna's pleased, sam siddhir hari toshanam, then my life is successful. So yes, there will be many temptations that come in our life to try to bring us away from the path of truth. When you're sitting on the bank of a river, the river Ganga or Yamuna, and you see the flow of the river, many objects enter into the river. Leaves, flowers, sometimes trees, corpses of buffaloes, humans, they're floating down the river. if they just stay in that current, they're going to reach the sea. However, if you're sitting on the bank of the Ganga in Rishikesh, where the river is flowing very forcefully, how many of those flowers are going to reach the sea? Most of them will somehow or other be attracted to the bank, and its progress is stopped. If we simply take shelter of the current of the Lord's mercy and remain on the path of pure devotional service as given to us by Rupa Goswami and his descendants in Parampara, then we will reach the sea, Karuna Sindhu, the sea of Krishna's eternal mercy. Twai me nanya vishaya matir madhupate sakrat ratim udvahatad ada gangevo gam udanvati. Queen Kunti prayed in this way: O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without stopping, without hindrance, let my attraction forever be drawn to you without being diverted to anything or anyone else. That was her prayer. Yes, there will be so many diversions, so many temptations. But somehow or other, we must take shelter of the holy name. We must take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. We must take shelter of the association of the devotees. We must take shelter of the deities, of the 9 processes of devotional service. And that was Prahlad. Such character. He knew that even though my father hates me, if I follow what he wants me to do, then that ignorant sentiment will show my hatred for my father's soul. But if I continue in my devotional service, that is the way I could best show my love for Krishna. And if you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is satisfied. If I just remain faithful to the Lord's holy name and to the Lord's loving service, I will show the greatest amount of mercy and love to my Father, whether he understands it or not. That is love. When Lord Narasimhadev was ripping Hiranyakashipu to pieces, Prahlad loved his father. He loved his father more than anyone else in creation. He was the only person in the whole creation that loved his father. His father hated him. Now, we never see paintings or read episodes in Bhagavatam where when Lord Narasimhadev is, he's ripping Hiranyakashipu's abdomen open and pulling out his intestines and growling and putting a garland of bloody entrails on his body. Can you imagine seeing your father die like that? The father's flapping and squirming in pain and we don't hear of Prahlad holding his eyes or running away or screaming. He was in ecstasy. He was standing there folding his hands, smiling. How nice, how wonderful. My Lord is so merciful. Because he wasn't just seeing the physical condition. He was seeing, my father is being liberated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How wonderful. And when Narasingadeva offered him benediction, what was benediction? My father was such a cruel demon. Please give him liberation. That is love. Love for the soul. Not the sentimental love on the bodily platform. Because such sentimental love on the bodily platform could, if for all practical purposes, be an expression of cruelty to the soul. That is why knowledge is so important. But unless knowledge is being directed by previous acharyas, even that knowledge becomes corrupt. So Hiranyakashipu, he's telling this wonderful story, but he's living completely opposite. Quite amazing. Back to the story he's telling. The queens are doing the greatest injustice, the greatest harm to the soul of King Suyagya. Because of their sentimental, so-called love, he's bound, trapped in a ghost body, attached to a dead corpse, and he can't go on. Yamaraj appears. But he appears in a way to change their hearts, to release Suyagya and remove the ignorance from these queens so that they can move forward on the path of Dharma. In order to do so, he manifests the body of a child. Because it is obvious here that if he came as Yamaraj, the queens would offer all respect, but they would be expecting some kind of philosophy from him. And they were not in a mood of philosophy. Sometimes, when your mind is really affected, it's immune to any kind of philosophy. Yes? Sometimes, if it's affected by the arrows of Kamadev, yes, we have seen. And that arrow pierces the heart, creates flames. Infatuation. And then you preach nice philosophy. In fact, you can even say, you know, Prabhu, I'm going to quote you from your own class last year. You taught me this. Person, I can't hear it. I can't hear it. There's too many other voices going on in my mind. I know the philosophy. How many times we have experienced this in people and in ourselves. I know the philosophy. I know what should be done. I know what should not be done. But sometimes due to aggrievement, sometimes due to anger, greed, lust, pride, illusion, these powers control us so much that even if somebody comes and speaks philosophy, even if we're reading right in the book, still, it doesn't touch our hearts. We're being controlled. So preaching is really about changing a person's heart. When our beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he understood that there were formal, standard, traditional methods. But ultimately, what works to transform a person's consciousness? That's real compassion. And he made many adjustments to somehow or other reach people's hearts. So Yamaraj understood that if he comes as a small boy, these queens, their hearts are going to melt seeing a little boy. And if a little boy speaks philosophy, it's enchanting. It's just, you're not expecting it. It's very sweet. It's irresistible. Especially to ladies. Yes, little boy. So he appeared like that. Because his intention was to change their hearts. In the coming verses, Yamaraj is going to tell them that you're so worried about your future. Look at us little children. I don't have a mother. I don't have a father. I'm wandering through the forest. No ferocious animals are eating me. I'm not starving. I'm not freezing. I'm happy. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord, is my protector. And look at these big, big adults, ladies. They're all so worried about things. Don't they understand? That if you just, the Lord will protect you. Hiranyakashipu is telling this. And then he goes on to tell the story about the Kalinga birds. How there was a hunter. And this particular hunter, he would arrange nice foods, just what birds like to eat, to tempt them. And they'd go to eat the food, but the food would be within a net. And as they were eating and enjoying, they'd be trapped. So, there was a male and female, something like husband and wife, consorts. And they loved each other and they had children. Now the hunter knows exactly how to get them. Just like Maya knows how to get you and me. Maya is the hunter. And we are her prey. Now, for materialistic people, they're already in the net. They've been in the net since time immemorial. They're trapped. They are her property. They are not only her property, they are her agents. Propagating and promoting her campaign to keep everyone in illusion, to keep everyone away from the loving devotional service of Radha and Krishna. So,
Mayad Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam.
Maya is Krishna's energy. Daivi Yeshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. This Maya, this illusory energy, Krishna said, it is my divine potency. consisting of three modes of material nature. Maya is all powerful. There is no power that can resist Maya within all of existence. Even the greatest of the devatas, the greatest of the rishis, Vishwamitra Muni, Brahmacharis, what is your tapasya compared to Vishwamitra Muni? But he fell victim to Maya until he took shelter of the Lord. Only if we take shelter of the Lord protects us from Maya. You cannot protect yourself from Maya, but the Lord has the power to remove the obstacles, to protect you in all situations. But we must take shelter. Bhakti is about understanding our insignificant constitutional nature. The jiva has no power against Maya unless it takes shelter of the Supreme Lord. Then Maya cannot touch us. So Maya is very powerful. And when you try to become a devotee, she wants to get you back in her net. And she knows what you used to like, what weaknesses are there, and beware. It's all going to come in due course of time. That's why our sadhana is so important. So that whatever may come in our direction from Maya, we will have the strength and the intelligence of Krishna to protect us, of Guru and the Vaishnavas to protect us. Otherwise, we're finished. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, unless one is chanting attentively 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day, then at any moment that person may fall victim to Maya. We have to prepare ourselves. It's not maybe, it's not if, it's for sure. Maya is going to try to get us in that net by putting the food, the bait that will attract us. So just the food that that lady Kalinga bird liked, oh, how happy she must have been. Ah, it's right here. I'm looking everywhere and it's right here. So nice. Now, for devotees, that temptation could be so powerful. We need the association of devotees to protect us. If she had some god sisters around her, they would be saying, you know, Mataji, it's Maya's trap. Don't you see the net all around it? Oh, okay. They'd hold her back somehow or other. But sometimes, even after doing, I don't believe you, I know what I'm doing, get away from me. Trap. So there she was, trapped in the net. And Mr. Kalinga. He sees Mrs. Kalinga in the trap. Oh, how it grieved his heart. He was tears coming from his Kalinga eyes. How will I live? She's half my body. How could I live without her? It's not fair. Why has Providence done that? We have little bird children whose wings are not even grown. They cannot fly. They cannot protect themselves. They cannot survive. They are depending on the mother. Why, Providence? Why have you done this to my wife? What about me? What about my children? I can't take care of my children without her. Oh, How unfair. Why is this happening? And meanwhile, the hunter's just watching everything. Perfect. Just perfect. As they say in capitalistic society, two for the price of one. By getting the wife, because of the attachment of the husband, he's just standing right over the net, screaming. In his crying out in lamentation for his wife, he's actually calling the hunter to come and get him. He shoots his arrow. And the Kalinga bird, the male, shot dead and falls into the net. Hare Krishna. Yamaraj tells the story. So similarly, dear queens, don't you see you're in the same position? No matter how much you cry, no matter how much you weep, no matter how much you squeeze this dead corpse, your husband is dead. He'll never come back. But we are all spirit souls. Let go. Move forward. Yamaraj is inspiring them to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And Hiranyakashipu knows this philosophy. When I was with His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj during his last weeks, at one time he made a decision that he would enter into Nirjan Bhajan. Well, he was cutting off all communication with everyone except his immediate caretakers, so that he could totally absorb himself in hearing and chanting the glories of Radha and Krishna. So I was one of the caretakers. And we would spend hours every day just sharing Krishna Katha. It was so sweet. It was so beautiful. Meanwhile, he wouldn't see anyone. He wouldn't, no emails, no phone calls. It was only Harikatha. And going through a very, very painful condition, but he wanted to fix his mind on Krishna. So there were senior god brothers who wanted to come and see him. They were calling. He wouldn't see them. There were disciples, so loving disciples, who wanted to see him. Wouldn't see them. I asked Maharaj, you don't even have to talk to them. We just have Nam Sankirtan, and they could just come in and they could offer obeisances and just tell you how much they appreciate and grateful, and then they could leave. He said, everyone's already done that. He said, because there's so much love I have for them, and there's so much love that they have for me. Even if they don't say anything, they'll come in and look at me, and I'll look at them, and they'll start crying because of their imminent separation. And he said that exchange will keep me bound to this body and to my relationship with them on this level. He said, I want to fix my consciousness on my relationship with Radha and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. I want to fix my consciousness on my relationship with all these devotees in Goloka Vrindavan. That is the best I could do for them. Otherwise, it makes it difficult for me to give up this body as long as people are crying all around me. That was his spirit of devotion at that particular time. It's not that he wanted to neglect them. It's not that he wanted to leave them. It's not that he wanted to reject them. It's that he wanted to help them to go to Goloka, Vrindavan. He wanted to help bring them upward. But in order to do so, he felt at that particular time in his life, he was at the last stages of terminal cancer, that I have to free myself from my identity as a preacher in this world. I've given my life to be a preacher in this world, but at this particular time, I have to give up my identity as a preacher in this world and try to focus on my identity as an associate of Krishna in the spiritual world. In a similar way, Yamaraj is preaching here. Mahajano yena katasapanta. The path of perfection is we must follow the Mahajans. And here Mahajan is speaking. What is real love? Real love is for the soul. Machchita matkata prana bodhyanta parasparam katyantascha mam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. What is the love between devotees? It is enlightening each other, inspiring each other in Krishna, discussing Krishna, chanting together the names of Krishna, hearing about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, serving Krishna, exchanging Krishna. That is love. Inspiration to the soul. And that is what Vaishnava society is about. Real Vaishnava society means no false ego. Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Das Anudas, to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of Gopis, Sri Krishna. And what is the greatest service, the para upakar, the greatest welfare we can do for the world in general, and the greatest service we can do for each other? To assist one another in focusing the mind on Krishna. When Sri Padmadavendra Puri was in his last days, his dear disciple Ishvara Puri his actions were so exemplary for all of us. If we analyze his service to his guru, there were two principles. One is the most menial, humble service attitude. And the other, constantly chanting Krishna's name and speaking Krishna's glories. The two captured the heart of his Guru Maharaj. One without the other is not complete in capturing Guru and Krishna's heart. They must be together. That is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in teaching us how to fix our mind in Krishna by chanting his names, he gave this verse. Trinadapi sunichena taror iba sahishnuna hamanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We can only constantly chant Krishna's names. We can only constantly develop that taste for Krishna's teachings, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form, Krishna's divine loving nature. When we are humble like a blade of grass, tolerant and forgiving like a tree, eager to give respect to others and expect no respect for oneself. Only in that state of consciousness can we develop that taste to hear and chant constantly. So here was Ishwarapuri. He was constantly chanting the glories of the Lord for his Guru Maharaj as a service. His Guru Maharaj was in such a high state of love and separation. And in that state of separation, it's the most humbling of all states of consciousness. When the residents of Vrindavan are with Krishna, sambhog, sometimes they become, they're very happy. Krishna's only with me. When Krishna's sitting on bank of Yamuna with Balaramji taking prasad, there's so many gopas around him eating prasad. And everyone is thinking, Krishna's only looking at me. Of all the other cowherd boys, he's looking at me. During Ras Lila, all gopis are thinking, Krishna's only dancing with me. But when Krishna left, in Vipralamba Seva, everybody became just absolutely humble in that separation. They are both completely pure divine states. But still, Madhavendra Puri, feeling separation from Krishna, like a gopi after Krishna left for Mathura, he's crying. O Lord of Mathura, where have you gone? My heart is broken. What shall I do now? That was his humility, the ultimate humility of separation and love. He was thinking helpless. I lost Krishna. In Gambira, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 12 years, constantly, that was his state. That total humility. Krishna left me. Where is Krishna? That was Madhavendra Puri's state. And he's asking Ishwarapuri, tell me about Krishna, fill me with Krishna. And it's a humble service, Ishwarapuri. He's not thinking, I am now the guru of my guru. My guru is inquiring from me, my guru wants to hear Hari Katha from me. He was not like that. My guru is so exalted. And me of all, insignificant. He wants to hear Hari Katha for me. He's serving him by constantly hearing and chanting, by constantly chanting the glories of the Lord, but at the same time performing the most menial possible services. He's willing to stay up all day and all night to turn his guru's body over when it needs to be go over with his own hands. Now, Ishwarapuri at the time was a great sannyasi. He could have called one of his servants. I'll do the Harikatha. You, Govinda Prabhu, you come. You clean all the stool in your own while I do Harikatha. He could have said like that. But no, with his own hands, he was washing the body of his guru. With his own hands, he didn't put on those plastic sanitation gloves either. With his own hands, he was cleaning the urine. He was cleaning the stool. Feeling what a blessing this is. This was his humility. How merciful my Guru Maharaj is that he's giving me this most exalted service. The great Narottam Das Thakur was also in that consciousness. Lokanath Goswami was hesitant to initiate him because he had never initiated anyone. He was a personal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord had left the world. His dearmost life and soul was Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. They lived together for so many long years in Sri Vrindavan Dham. They had both left the world. Lokanath Goswami was simply weeping in separation from the Lord and his associates. And Narottam Das Thakur is asking him for initiation. He said, I can't. I have no capacity. Narottam Das Thakur wanted to serve. Early in the morning, he would go to that place where Lokanath Goswami would perform his duties prior to bathing in Yamuna. And he would clean the area very carefully where Lokanath Goswami would respond to the calls of nature. Why is this happening? Lokanath Goswami couldn't understand why every day it's so clean, it's so fresh. So he secretly watched. He came early to see who was doing. And there he saw Narottam Das Thakur with tears of gratitude in his eyes, chanting the holy names of the Lord, chanting the praises of his guru in his heart. He was cleaning with his hands. He emerged from the bushes. Narottam, why? Why? You are a prince. You are meant to be a king. Such a scholar, such a great devotee. Why? Cleaning my urine and stool with your hands every day? Narottam Das Thakur, with folded palms, revealed his heart. By renouncing the wealth of this world, I have achieved the highest of all wealth, the greatest treasure of menial service to my Guru Maharaj. Yes, Ishwarapuri was serving his Guru with utter humility. And thus he was empowered to chant the glories of the Lord in such a way that Madhavendra Puri he was so pleased that he reciprocated by granting the highest blessing. To Ishwarapuri, Madhavendra Puri said, I bless you, my son. May you have love for Krishna. That blessing empowered Ishwarapuri to the highest state of bhakti. So much so that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam, who was Krishna tasting the sweetness of Radha's love, that Lord accepted Ishwarapuri as his guru. And we read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, how Lord Gauranga performed menial services to Ishwarapuri. And listened to him attentively, took initiation from him. This is the spirit of devotion. And it is this principle that Srimad Bhagavatam is revealing through these pages. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movement for setting in the west. Yes, the real love amongst devotees is to be humble servant of the servant of the servant to one another, and to constantly try to enliven, inspire, and nourish each other by speaking about Krishna, by chanting Krishna, by together being engaged in Krishna seva. And if that attitude of humble servitude and deep attachment to hearing and chanting is established between us, Krishna manifests. Krishna is all attractive. Krishna will attract our own hearts, and Krishna will attract the world to the Sangam of such ecstatic devotees sharing Krishna with each other. And then when we come together for Nam Sankirtan, the spiritual world manifests. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Much louder, please. Questions or comments? Radha Gopinath Prabhu, would you like to add anything? Govinda Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, thank you very much for an extremely brilliant class, Maharaj. My mind is just flooded with so many questions, but your last point, which you mentioned about menial service to the spiritual master.
And to the Vaishnavas.
And to the Vaishnavas. Maharaj, I was just thinking in this modern ISKCON society, the modern day ISKCON society.
And to all living entities. Yes, go on.
In this scenario where that we are, where you know, many times it is a question in the mind on how do we really perform menial service to a spiritual master. Does it mean physical menial service, the way you explained the two examples? Both were physical services to the spiritual master. But many times the disciple is not in physical proximity with the spiritual master. So what is the right understanding of menial service? And my second question is connected is that many times over the years we become leaders, and even though we want, but it is we are not able to do menial service because of situations. We are always in a position. I'll give a simple example like book distribution. You know, we would love to really pick up the books and put it in a place, but there are many other services to inspire people and, you know, be around. So we are not able to do menial service, and menial service is done by people who are somewhat junior in one sense. And then we lose the chance of doing menial service. And here you portrayed so much importance to menial service. So how do we really understand in our practical situations on how do we really perform this menial service and get advantage of this this wonderful opportunity of making progress?
The menial service is our purpose, the spirit of our heart. Krishna's bhavagrahi. A devotee could also be cleaning stool and urine from the body of his guru and be very proud. Look at me. Look at what's on my hands. It's not on your hands. Yes, and we have seen people who have such menial service to guru think I'm better than others because they don't have such menial service. That's not menial service attitude. That's only an external facade. It is the spirit. Let us take example of Narottam Das Thakur. He was cleaning the urine and stool of Lokanath Goswami from the ground of Sri Braj Dham on the bank of the Jamuna. Very menial service, attitude. It was expression of his heart. On the order of Lokanath Goswami, he went back to Kethuri Gram. And there, he became powerful guru. He was giving lectures to thousands and thousands. He was initiating great Brahmins like Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. Ganga Narayan Chakravarti was the most learned, prestigious Brahmin of that area. On the banks of the Padma River, Ganga River. Narottam Das Thakur was not a Brahmin. He was a Kayasta. In some places, Kayastas are considered Kshatriyas. In other places, they're considered Shudras. So the Brahmins in that area considered Narottam Das Thakur a Shudra. And caste consciousness was very high. Can you imagine what the Brahmin class considered when this Shudra gave Diksha to a highly learned, respected Brahmin? They considered it total arrogance. They considered a total deviation from the Vedic system. Yes? They wanted to destroy Narottam Das Thakur. They went to the king. I believe his name is Narasingha. And complained, this man must be put to justice. Whole assembly of learned, smart Brahmins approached the king. We must punish this man. You're a Hindu? He's destroying the Hindu tradition. What is this? They were very angry. But Ganga Narayan Chakravarti had complete faith in Narottam Das Thakur as his guru. And even despite so many death threats, so much criticism, Narottam Das Thakur just kept initiating more and more Brahmins. And not only that, he was initiating dacoits. Chandra Rai, we know the story. He was a king. He was a Brahmin who turned into a murderer. He was the king of dacoits. He had thousands of dacoits in his gang. He created a whole army. He was conquering entire villages and towns, plundering, killing, raping. Ultimately, Narottam Das Thakur became his guru. And he became humble and gentle and pure. So here he is, at one time, cleaning up for his Guru Maharaj in a most menial way. And a little later, he's an acharya with thousands of disciples, giving classes, installing deities, giving instructions. Was there a difference in spirit? Whether he was cleaning the stool of urine of his guru, or whether he was initiating high-class Brahmins and preaching to the masses as the acharya. In his heart, he was always just the menial servant carrying out the order of his Guru Maharaj. Yes? Our beloved Gurudev Srila Prabhupada, when he was on Jaladutta, he had nothing. He was in the most menial possible condition. He had just suffered 2 heart attacks, seasickness. He had 40 rupees. He didn't know anyone in America. And he's praying to Krishna, I have no power to speak. I don't know these people. I don't know how to talk to them. Krishna, my Guru Maharaj has ordered me to do this. I'm just carrying out the order of my Guru Maharaj. Krishna, you can make me a success or you can make me a failure. It's up to you. If you speak through me, only will they understand your message. I'm your puppet, Krishna. Just let me dance as you make me dance. I have no devotion. I have no knowledge, but you have given me the title Bhaktivedanta. It is for you, Krishna, to fulfill the meaning of my name. That was his state on the Jaladutta. Simply, menially carrying out the order of his guru. And a few years later, similar to Narottam Das Thakur, thousands of disciples, beautiful palatial buildings, millions of books being distributed. But was there a difference? He was the same as he was on the Jaladutta. The same spirit. I'm just trying to please my Guru Maharaj. I'm just trying to please the previous acharyas by repeating their message. Yes? So it is that spirit. If you want to be there and do menial services of cleaning up before your guru, and your guru wants you to go out and preach, what is a menial service? To do what he wants or to do what you want? But we should never be proud. We should never, as soon as we think, I am great, Punar Mushtaka Bhava. It's the beginning of the end. We are all like little mice. But by the mercy of Guru, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, by the mercy of the previous Acharyas, by the mercy of Nithai Gora Chandra, we could be empowered to roar like lions. Hare Krishna. But if we become proud, inevitably, pride leads us, impels us, forces us to commit aparads. A humble person cannot really seriously commit aparads. We could commit some aparads, but it's not serious. A real aparad is based on envy, which is born of false pride. Yes? When we're proud, we're going to commit offenses. And then Krishna withdraws his power. And again, we become a mouse. We're giving great lectures. But then, nothing. But the delusion is so much that even squeaking like a little mouse, we think we sound like a lion. Hare Krishna. Like blank bullets. A bullet, but it has substance. A blank bullet has the exact same sound, but no substance. We can speak, we can act, but if we're not pleasing our guru, if we're not pleasing the Vaishnavas, if we're not pleasing Krishna, if we don't have a proper service attitude, it may sound great to foolish people, but the substance is not there. The substance of what we do is based on our service attitude. The substance of our chanting, the substance of our preaching, the substance of our actions is according to how we're pleasing Guru and Krishna through our service attitude. So we should always have this humble service attitude. We should always know that we are completely dependent on the mercy of higher powers, whatever we're doing. And whether you're Hanuman or whether you're that little squirrel or spider that's kicking dust, that is not what is important. What is important is that Lord Ram is pleased by your sincerity. Yes? They will lift us up to the spiritual world. They will lift us up and reveal to us the intimate pastimes of Vrindavan and our particular participation in those pastimes. They will lift us up if we please them. Madhbhakta puja vyadika. Krishna is pleased when we please his devotees. So never think yourself the doer. When we sit down to chant the Maha Mantra every day, we should be like beggars. Like a starving man is begging for some food. That is how we should call out the holy name. Begging for mercy. Does that answer your question? Is there any other questions? Yes, Brishabhanu Prabhu. First was Sri Dhamma and then Brishabhanu Prabhu. Like father, like son.
Hare Krishna Maharaj for a very fascinating and instructive class. During the course of your lecture, you mentioned that Prahlad Maharaj did not fall a victim to his own sentiment of affection for his father because he desired his ultimate good. Now, Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee and Hiranyakashipu was a demon. But when we live in devotee circles, either as grihasthas, both are devotees, or the family is full of devotees, everyone can have a different perspective regarding what the focus should be on Krishna. And sometimes there may be occasions wherein one has to give in to the sentiments of the other person, even though one person may feel that it is not really the thing should be done, but we still go along because everybody is a devotee and don't want to hurt anyone. So in such situations where only devotees are there and where sometimes the sentiments expressed by the devotee may not be fully Krishna conscious, then what should be our attitude in dealing with such situations?
We never want to annihilate our sentiments, because bhakti is pure sentiment. We want to purify our sentiment by directing it toward the loving service of the Lord. Yes? Sometimes devotees become so philosophical that they have a misconception that sentiment is a distraction. Yes? And then, I hate to say it, but something like Hiranyakashipu, the philosophy makes them hard-hearted. We have seen devotees sick, devotees suffering. Ah, you are not this body, you're in Maya. Get up, work. What is the use of such a philosophy? No compassion. You're making aparads. It happens. So, bhakti is the path by which philosophy directs our sentiments in such a way that they become completely purified. Yes? Prabhupada said, religion without philosophy is sentimentalism or fanaticism. Philosophy without religion is simply mental speculation. They must both be there. Devotees are sentimental. The residents of Vrindavan are supremely sentimental. But their sentiments are absolutely pure. They're only for Krishna. Read the songs of Bhakti Vinod, Vasudev Ghosh, Narottam Das Thakur, Govinda Das. Read the songs of our acharyas. We'll find so much sentiment, but all perfectly in line with the philosophy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that when the heart's love for Krishna is directed toward living beings within this world, then that love manifests as compassion. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namo. Why we bow down our heads at the feet of the Vaishnavas? Because they are full of compassion for all the conditioned souls. And because they're always their hearts are always rooted in the loving service of Krishna. They are like desire trees. Yes. Because they're nourished by love for Krishna, all the fruits that come from their activities and their words are the fruits of love, which can satisfy all our desires. It's not simply because they're philosophical. It's because they're full of compassion. The conclusion of all their philosophy is that they love, which is a sentiment. They love Krishna and they love every living being with compassion. So philosophy is essential to nourish, to purify our bhakti. Yes? So I don't really understand your question so well, but from what I do understand, if there's sentimental issues amongst devotees and they differ, which they usually do, yes? The compassionate way to address such a situation is three things. One, we perform our sadhana so nicely that we actually access the power of Krishna. Krishna will give us the intelligence if we surrender to His holy name. Yes? And if we hear from the great souls and see how the great souls are doing things, we follow in their footsteps. And then our intelligence is actually nourished by our sangam, by our sadhana. And then we decide, what is the most compassionate way I can serve these people? And then you make your decision. Srila Prabhupada, he taught us so many wonderful things. When little children came to him, he didn't start speaking Upanishadic philosophy to them. Not even Bhagavad Gita so much. He gave them cookies. He rubbed them in the heads. He embraced them. And they loved him. And by loving him, by becoming attached to him, they were becoming attached to Krishna. Yes? To love a Vaishnava is to love Krishna. To be attached to a Vaishnava is to become attached to Krishna. Kapiladev tells us in Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever attachments we have in this world, just direct them to become attached to a Vaishnava. And that will connect us to Krishna. Yes? So time, place, and circumstance. There's a famous story of a lady who was really, really attached to being beautiful. And she dressed very elegantly and she made her hair very nice and she came to the temple and all the other ladies were wearing simple saris. And very traditional. I think everyone thought she was in Maya. She had perfumes. She came before Prabhupada. She was in Maya. There's no question. She was in Maya. So she came into Prabhupada's room. And devotees were expecting for Prabhupada to, you know, tell her, you know, this is all Maya. You're in the bodily concept. Prabhupada looked at her and he said, oh, you are so beautiful today. Her heart melted. She changed her hair. She went out of Prabhupada's room, changed her hair, put on a sari, and surrendered. Because she just felt, everybody else is criticizing me, but Prabhupada really loves me. I want to reciprocate. I want to please him. So that was, Prabhupada was taking the whole philosophy and he was applying it according to what would change a person's heart. Yes? And it worked. Now to others, to somebody else, Prabhupada said, what is this Maya? Some other devotee came in with long hair, one of his disciples, he says, he was thinking he looked very nice. Prabhupada said, why have you gone back to becoming a hippie? This is nonsense. Yes? to the lady, he says, "Oh, you are so beautiful today." Kaladesha Patra. Our philosophy is to be instruments of Krishna, to do what is effective to bringing a person closer to Krishna. The fact that so many devotees have so many different opinions and so many different types of faith and so many different types of natures is what makes Vaishnavism beautiful. If Krishna is in the center. But if Krishna is not in the center, it's chaotic. Yes? In the spiritual world, we see so many different types of devotees. In Vaikuntha, they're more the same. But in Vrindavan, so much variegatedness in different types of devotees. There's Jatila and Kutila. Yes? They're very different types of devotees. They have very different sentiments and very different opinions. But ultimately, they all want the pleasure of Radha and Krishna in their own unique ways. And because we are the line of Gaudiya Siddhanta, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line is coming from Goloka Vrindavan. So there's so much variegatedness. And so many different ideas, so many different natures, different thoughts, different feelings, so many. And that's why there's so much fighting. Because Krishna's not in the center. If Krishna's in the center, even if we fight, it increases our love for each other. It increases our unity. But if Krishna's not in the center, that same fighting creates envy, antagonism, and divisions. What is the problem? The spirit, the intention, the purpose, the service attitude. What will please Krishna? Now, we may have so many different opinions of what pleases Krishna. And amani na manadena means, I think I'm right and you think you're right. So, we're both Vaishnavas. We're both serving the same system, basically. You think you're right, I think I'm right, so we're both right. So let's work together and do something. Yes? No, I'm right and you are wrong. What happens? Does that answer your question? I'm sorry, I forgot your question. Thank you. One more question? Yes, Krishna Nam Prabhu.
Maharaj, when you replied to Sri Rama Prabhu to his question, a doubt came to my mind. Sometimes when we are dealing with devotees, particularly in the position of a senior with a junior devotee, there are times when we are required to give a particular sense of direction, particular advice as to how they should be carrying out their spiritual lives, their material lives. At that time, although your intention might be genuine, there might be a perception from their side that you are interfering too much into their lives. And because of that, the relationship between you and that devotee starts becoming estranged. So a doubt comes to our mind, Maharaj, whether we should adopt a middle position where we do not stretch ourselves too much to reach out to a devotee, or reach out to the devotee with a possibility that there might be a misunderstanding from him, or he may not be ready to accept whatever you are saying, and then consequently the relationship gets estranged or damaged. So this was a doubt that was there in my mind.
Very complicated. management is always complicated. Yes? In all circumstances, it is important that we're focusing on the goal. We have so many immediate needs to be accomplished that cannot be neglected. It is our duty. But it should always be in reference to pursuing the goal. If we forget the goal of why we're doing what we're doing, then we'll start doing things all wrong. It may be right materially, but ultimately it will be wrong. Does that answer your question? Doesn't answer your question. I was testing you. So, it is important in our service as a leader that we earnestly and honestly are trying to do what's best for that person and for the mission at large, individually and collectively, because anything you speak to one person is also affecting the whole mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we have to keep both reference points. What is best for this individual person and in relationship to the mission of the Lord? I hate to say this. Actually, I'm very happy to say this. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but I will say this. There's no substitute for maturity and realization. If we have maturity and realization, our discrimination of how to deal with a particular situation is empowered by forces greater than our own. Yes? So as we make spiritual advancement, if it's genuine, we have greater maturity and greater realization, and we're able to actually see in such conflicting situations that you're speaking about what is actually best for the individual and what is best for their relationship with the mission. We have to use our intelligence focused on that goal. Sometimes interfering is what that person needs. Sometimes not interfering and letting that person learn by their own mistakes is what's most effective. It's the same with a parent, is it not? When to discipline a child and when to be lenient with a child. A parent has to be fixed on what's ultimately for the good. One of the great problems is we see the situation, but we don't see it in the context of the whole picture. And a Vaishnava must see everything in the context of the whole picture. The whole picture means that person's spiritual life in relationship to God and to the mission. Yes? Our own Acharya Srila Prabhupada, sometimes when he saw a devotee do something wrong, he would come down like a nuclear bomb and chastise that person. And other times, he heard someone was doing something wrong, he understood the nature of the person, he understood what would work, and he let that person just go on and learn from his own mistake. Yes? It was not stereotyped. It's not a formula that this person does this, you do that. This person does this. Compassion is not based on a structured formula. compassion is based on a genuine, sincere concern for that person's spiritual life. And we have to adjust accordingly. Yes. If a leader is too lenient, you could be cheating that person. You're not performing your duty. And you can be caught be causing complex problems for the whole mission. But at the same time, if you're too strict, you could do the same thing. So we have to, according to time, place, and circumstance, pray to the Lord of our heart. Take the advice of senior Vaishnavas. Take shelter of the holy name and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then make your decision of what's best to help this person in reference to the whole picture of his or her spiritual life. That is real leadership. Any manager can just make methodical decisions. And there's no doubt, we need good management. But not mundane management. Our movement will not grow by mundane management. We can take management principles, but if they are not activated by the heart of a compassionate Vaishnava, it will not please Krishna. Does that answer your question? So we should end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.